Hey guys, welcome to the Days in the Wild podcast, formerly Interviews with the Hunting Masters. Yep, we changed the name, but not the format, nothing like that. Everything's going to stay the same and try to keep it as streamlined as possible, bring you the same type of content. I'm open for suggestions, so if anybody wants to send me, drop me a line. You know, most of these podcasts come about from questions that are generated by you. So please keep those questions coming, and we'll get them answered. The official changeover will be April 1st. Put that on your calendar, please, April 1st, because you may need to go in and resubscribe to the show depending on the platform that you're in. So keep that in mind. Interviews with the Hunting Masters, it's on that URL now. It's going to change over Days in the Wild, and there is a slight possibility that you may need to resubscribe. So, April 1st, keep that in mind. So, before we roll into this next episode, I want to talk to you a little bit about conservation and some of the things that we can be doing out there. A woman actually asked me today, she's on Instagram, she was like, how... You know, I'm not trying to be sly or try to be whatever. She said, I just want to know what it is you get out of hunting. Why do you hunt? Educating the non-hunting public about why you do what you do, the benefits of hunting, talk to them about the North American model of conservation and the Pittman-Robinson Act, all that stuff. Educate yourself first, you know, so you don't sound like a dum-dum like I do often. And really, you know, arm yourself with the tools to educate people on the benefits and what we do and why. Because I can't tell you how many times I talk to people and they just automatically assume that their tax dollars is what funds, you know, their income tax or their property tax or whatever, they think it funds conservation and it doesn't. So educate yourself, arm yourself with those and be ready to, you know, educate the non-hunting public. And another thing I want you guys to go, if you're not already a member of, you know, Mule Deer Foundation, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, stuff like that, get involved. The Mule Deer Foundation is awesome. We just got back from the Hunt Expo. They do a lot of excellent stuff out there. Go to muledeer.org and become a member. If you're already a member, there's things on the website where you can look up and find other ways to get involved. If you're not a member, become a member. It's super easy. It's a tax write-off. It's helping the end goal. So get on their website, check out the Mule Deer Foundation, go check out Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Wild Sheep Foundation, all these organizations. Get involved as many as you possibly can. You know, I'm not saying if you can't afford it, we understand. Do what you can do. If you could put in some sweat equity, check on their websites and see if they have any programs for you to get involved. Thanks a lot, and let's roll into this next episode. Hey guys, little bonus episode for you here. Got to catch up with a good buddy of mine, Trevin Stolfus of Outback Outdoors. He has a podcast called Inspired Wild. Go check it out. Him and myself and my wife sat down and at the Hunt Expo and had a little convo. He shared it with me, so I'm going to share it with you guys.
We are back. Western Hunting Expo. I ran in my good buddy John Stallone, the legend, the myth.
Oh, come on.
The man. John, how long have we known each other?
A long time. When you guys started the show.
Yeah, that's right.
Right when you started the show.
Right. And then, as for those of you guys that have followed my Ibex journey, John was extremely influential in my success.
Thank you.
Because he came out. Worked probably, I think you worked harder for me than you did when you killed your Ibex.
I don't know about that.
Well, exactly. No, because you killed yours on your second one.
No, I killed on the first.
Oh.
And first I one. Shot another one on the second on the time.
That's right. Okay. I got those confused. But you definitely were the – you definitely played a huge part in that success. And here you are.
I got the hot wife with me.
His beautiful wife is here. And she might not say anything. That's okay, though. Yeah. That is totally okay.
If you're lucky.
But you know what? You get left behind a lot. I've got to meet the kids. I've got to stay at your house.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How does that feel? Because I know where it comes from with my wife.
And getting left behind?
Getting left behind.
Oh, well, he makes up for it.
In other ways.
In other ways.
In like how?
Like taking me here.
I
enjoy going with him hunting.
Do you?
I do.
Okay. Do you hunt yourself?
I have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is it? Would you rather just go?
Not all the time, because then we're both gone from the kids. But
oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
But we're going to Argentina together.
Yeah, we got
That'll
a stag
fun.
Hunt coming up here in what 3 weeks?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Second week of March.
And look, you got me to talk.
Yeah. I knew it.
Well, you know, one of the things that people forget that is, you know, a lot of us are married or significant others, whatever. When you're gone, somebody's got to keep the household together. Somebody's got to feed the dogs or the kids or get them to soccer practice or piano lessons. Or, you know, I have one, and I know how busy my wife is. She works, and then it's volleyball and basketball and track, and when she was playing softball. I mean, there's a lot to it. When I first started hunting, I'd say let me change that, because I was young.
Right.
But when I first started doing it and filming and trying to ride and all of these different avenues in the early 2000s, my wife was not on board.
I knew what I was getting into with him before we were married. I knew him 5 years before we even started dating.
Who did you meet?
My dad.
Okay.
Yeah. Frank the Tank. Frank is one of my best hunting friends at the time. And he was a business partner of mine. And we used to go hunt. He's the guy that traveled with me. Like, he's the guy, we're like, hey, Frank, we're going to go, you know, to South Carolina. We're going to go to Utah. We're going to go to Colorado. And Frank would come. He's my first guiding client. That's what I used to tell him all the time. You're my first guiding client. But he always had it in his head that Marie and I were going to get together.
Oh, he thought you were.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Really? Did he try and set you up?
Oh, years.
He did. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
So it's funny because I used to double date with my ex-girlfriend with Frank and his wife, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, you know. And she was dating another guy at the time. And,
how long have you been married?
12 years.
12 years, March 1st.
Yep.
That's kind of weird. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Just the fact that you're buddies with your father-in-law, which I think is great. I like my father-in-law, but I wouldn't want to go hunting with him just because it's not his bag, right?
Right.
So the fact that you...
Yeah.
Developed that. And then what did you think about him? I mean, if your dad's trying to fix you up.
I mean, there was always a secret crush there, but we both had other relationships. So until those were done, there was really no question. And then everything aligned.
Yeah.
Worked out.
She broke up with her boyfriend. And then I broke up with my girlfriend like within months of each other. And he invited me over for a barbecue. And... actually, there's more to the story. I was engaged. Okay, I was engaged to be married
to the ex.
Ex-fiance.
I mean, ex-fiance.
Yeah, but you're married.
Is that the same girl though that you were dating, and you're dating somebody else?
Right.
You're not engaged.
No.
Okay.
No, she's
Thank
not
God.
Engaged. So
how? What's the age difference?
Five.
Four and a half.
Four and a half. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Almost 5 years. Anyway, so I was engaged.
I would have said it was eight.
Thanks.
But it's me.
I get that a lot. Everybody thinks I'm 10 years older than her.
You're engaged.
I'm engaged. And we break off the engagement like a couple months before I'm going to get married.
Just like this ain't going to work.
Yeah.
Okay.
We
amical. Amicable? Is that the word? Did I just make up a word?
No, that's a real word.
Okay. That's a real word. It's, yeah, pretty
okay.
much.
Okay.
Pretty much amicable. Yeah, it wasn't like, you know, it was like a light switch. Boom, off, done. You know, where I went one way, she went the other way. And the night that I was actually supposed to have my wedding, Frank gets this idea, I'm going to throw a barbecue at my house for you. So I was going to have a throw a party because I had to pay for a wedding that I never had. 40 right. grand. Gone. Anyway, but that's besides the point.
Man, I would have just friggin' gone to the church with all my buddies.
Yeah,
and
I was gonna have a. I was gonna throw a rager. I really was, but I decided, nah, not to do it.
Okay.
Long story short, came over for a barbecue. We ended up going out later in the night, karaoke.
I sang her a couple songs, karaoke, and that's
it. Oh, you did it.
The panties dropped. And
started hanging out as friends, and I had
wait
to make
a minute,
the first
wait
move.
A minute.
I made the first move.
You did?
She did.
Okay. Now, were you just kind of, did that make you extra, like, cautious because it was your buddy's daughter?
Well, that's why she ended up making the first move, because I knew in my, I'm like, this can't be just a hookup, you know? I'm like, if I hook up with Maria,
right,
it has to be something more to it. I can't just, like, hook up with her and be like, peace, you
be
know?
A, be a re, like a rebound.
Yeah, I can't.
One-nighter.
So, I'm like, I got to be sure that I like her and there could be something more to this other than a physical
that's
attraction.
There's a lot of pressure there.
There was.
I mean, you have a good friend that you care about. His, you know,
right.
taking care of his daughter.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know that I could have done that. I mean, I guess in a situation, you're so fresh off of this breakup.
Yep.
There's a lot of things could have gone wrong there. And here you are 12 years later.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
No, you dated for a while.
It was very short.
Yeah.
We were engaged 5 months after our first real date. And
yeah.
then married 9 months after that.
So, yeah, like, I mean, we've been together almost 14 years.
Yeah, about
14 years.
Yeah. And it's just keeps getting better, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have any
it's
complaints.
It's like a fine wine. It's like vinegar now.
Yeah. Someone told me something. Yeah, it's just like 5 minutes. It seems like 5 minutes underwater. Oh, that's funny. I was fortunate. I met my wife. I dated a gal for a couple years, and everybody, it was like you're in a relationship and everybody else thinks like you guys are meant for each other.
Right.
But I didn't think so. Like mm-hmm. I was like, shouldn't I know? Like, shouldn't I just know?
Right.
And the crazy thing is my wife was friends with the girl I was dating, and I didn't know my wife at the time. I
right.
knew of her through friends of friends type of thing. And they went on a mission trip to Spain with Campus Crusade, which is a Christian organization where they went over in the summer. Well, they went on the same group, so they were actually, they got to know each other better and stuff like that. And my girlfriend at the time, you know, talked about me and stuff like that, and I was back, and we wrote letters. That was when you wrote letters,
right.
you know. Well, my wife went to shop for wedding dresses for my wedding. I didn't know, now, mind you, I had not asked her to marry me, but the girl I was dating was convinced
that it was
that
gonna
I
happen.
Was, when she got back, I was going to ask her to marry her,
sure.
marry me. And of course, my wife doesn't really know me other than know who I am, and because we kind of ran in the same circles. And yeah, they came back. I ended up breaking up with her when we got back. She was engaged to be married 4 or 5 months later
wow.
to another guy. She wanted to get married, I think.
Apparently.
And they're still married. They're happy. Good for them. I mean,
yeah.
it's great.
Yeah. yeah.
And then my little sister was playing volleyball at New Mexico State University. And I, she was knew Sandy, my wife, through mutual friends. Also, she said, you ought to ask Sandy out. And I said, nah. And I thought, well, she seems fun. And so I ended up calling her up. My sister got her number, and I called her up. And it's funny when she tells it because she's like, this is this girl's, you know, she only knew me as this girl's boyfriend mm-hmm. calling me.
That's
asking
funny.
Me out. But okay, and we hadn't,
yeah.
we, you know. And I'm 2 weeks in, I knew. It took me 8 months to convince her. But, and we're,
yeah.
we were last week, 21 years.
Nice.
I know everybody that I know that has a happy marriage, they had the same reaction that her and I had. Like, we knew. Like, you knew it was right.
Right.
Like, right off the get. You didn't have to be like, oh, you know, we've been dating for 5 years, but I'm not sure if I should, you know. If you don't know after 5 years, it's probably something wrong.
Yeah, it blows me away when, and again, maybe people are against the construct, the idea of, okay, I'll give you that, whatever. But when one is like, I want to get married, and the other's like, I'm not sure, and you know, you've been living on it for 6 years. Oh, okay. Now, yeah. Something's got to give there. Here we are, Inspired Wild Podcast, giving marriage advice.
That's it.
What's up with that?
We do it all.
You, John, are probably one of the OGs of the industry. I was talking to somebody else who's kind of like us that has been around, and, you know, back in the day, they wholehearted, this was their love, and they're still doing it today.
Yep.
And there's a few of us are still around. I'd say Willie Schmidt, he's been doing it a long time. You know, there's a lot of guys that are like that, but there's not many guys that are a level of a DIY, do it yourself. I mean, you have guided you. I mean, you've done so much.
I think I've worn just about every hat you could think of in this industry.
But you were one of the first. We were talking about it earlier. We were talking about online shows.
Yeah.
You were one of the first. There was you and Midwest Whitetails, mm-hmm. Heartland Bowhunter. We started. And there wasn't. Now you look. There's everybody's got a show.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
But then you didn't just stop there. You were early to podcasting.
11 years.
Right. I mean, you were before Joe Rogan even started.
Oh yeah.
And
podcasting wasn't even a cool thing. I was just looking for another way to give a benefit or a feature on the Hunting Channel online.
Right.
And that's how the interviews with the Hunting Master started. It was actually a brainchild of my cousin Fred. He's like, you should do this thing called a podcast. It was like, what's a podcast? It was called a podcast because you put it on your iPod. Right. You downloaded it to your iPod.
Right.
It wasn't as portable and, you know, streaming and everything else that it is today.
What kind of equipment did you use when you started out?
I used to record everything on the camera.
Okay, so
and
then you'd pull the audio off.
Yeah.
I got you. Well, yeah, because, I mean, that's literally, I was thinking about the other day, I think I heard there's 900,000 plus mm-hmm. podcasts now.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
And
I think 800,000 of them are hunting. Just kidding. No, but this
no,
was, no, I'm joking. There's a lot of hunting ones.
But I think the consistency is the key in that, and mm-hmm. you probably found that to be true.
Yeah.
But then you didn't just stop there. Then once the idea of being able, you've been very active on YouTube, being able to integrate all of these different platforms, you were one of the original ones that started connecting the dots.
Yeah, but the problem with that I did start before everybody, but there's so many people doing it so much better than me, like figured out how to market themselves. I think where I went wrong is that I was doing so many different things. Like, I guess the reason why I did it the way I did it was because originally I was trying to promote the Hunting Channel online, which was my main business. The TV show, the podcast, the writing, the writing started before that, but the writing evolved, the blog, all that stuff evolved. They were all vehicles to promote the Hunting Channel online. So I was trying to cast this giant net to catch as many fish as possible, but never really landing those big fish that I would have if I was using a rod and reel. You know what I'm saying?
Right, sure.
It was blessing and a curse in disguise, because like I said, I'm... You know, I only have like 8,000 followers or whatever on my YouTube. If I would have stuck with just YouTube, I could have been, you know, maybe like a hushing type scenario.
If you had it all to do over again, mm-hmm. well, there's a couple thoughts I have. The first one is, if you had it all to do over again, what would you have just concentrated on?
I think I'd do two things. I think I would do two things. I would have brought the podcast to the masses a lot earlier, not just make it a feature of the Hunting Channel, and I would have concentrated on the YouTube.
Okay. Second, my second question is, the way you tell a story is different than the way I tell, or the way Joe Blow tells a story, right? So we all have a different way. If we sit down and I tell, maybe the three of us were involved in something, mm-hmm. the way I tell the story of that event would be different than you or you. And there's something to be said for being true to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, though, I will give you this, pat on the back, whatever. You were always consistent across all the platforms.
Thank you.
The other thing I will say is I think you were too early.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for timing.
Oh, yeah.
Example. When we started our stuff online,
mm-hmm.
and you probably saw this too, I would talk to, let's just throw out an optic sponsor. And I'm sitting across the table from the optic executives.
Right.
And they're going, you have a webisode? What's a webisode?
Right.
And they said that online shows will never catch on.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, after 4 years, even though I had developed some relationships with Hoyt and some of these people, I still have relationships with, they were like, you need to go to television.
Right.
So I went to television. Now I sit there, and some of them are like, digital media, I wish you would have stayed in digital. What? You're the ones that told me to go to TV.
Exactly.
So I think part of it is the fact that when we were doing the online show,
right,
we were maybe a little bit early. And some of that is just luck of the draw, the timing. We had the idea. We were,
right.
You know, I say even you were ahead of me. And sometimes you just get frustrated because you don't get the response.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost if you would have not cared about the response and just kept grinding out that podcast,
right.
or that and concentrated on it, then all of a sudden it gets steam. But I did like you, and I went over here.
Right.
So we did okay here.
Yeah.
TV did inflate our numbers.
Right.
But now we've been pushed back now, like we're on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
That's the digital media we have chosen.
Right.
Because
and how's that going? I've been meaning to ask
you. Oh, it's going good.
Good.
It's amazing. We're not doing any advertising because I want to see what it grows in a year. We started October 15th is when we went first with season 5.
Right.
Which is about the first season I'm not embarrassed to show.
Okay.
Right. I felt like we'd kind of figured out some storytelling by then. Before, it was just us buddies videoing each other.
Right.
Let's be honest. And with some music behind it.
No, but I mean, I always thought you guys did a great, like, I feel you and Heartland were the first guys to actually put some cinematography into the shows. And
yeah,
you did it early
and,
on.
And I'll be honest, though, a lot of Heartland was very influential in us.
Film-like. Everything was very film-like.
But along with some skateboarding stuff.
Right.
And, you know, some of this, remember the old skiing and the
right.
Snow. So we took a lot of our inspiration from that, tried to integrate it with it. So, yes, I appreciate that because that's what we were going for. So in that genre of trying to do this, I feel like if I would have, I don't regret going to television,
because mm-hmm.
Now I have all this content. I can now take and re-release, and we've actually, with Amazon, going back to Amazon, we re-edited a bunch of it.
Nice.
Not that we went and shot spines or interviews.
No,
but we took a lot of the sponsor heavy billboard stuff like that out and made it more film like, even though it's shot pretty cinematic. It even shows more cinematic because Amazon doesn't want that.
Yeah.
You know, they want it to be a show. It won't want it to be a film.
Right.
And, there's a difference between a hunting show and a film. Film grabs you. It brings you in. You sit closer in your chair when it's exciting. You're on the edge of your chair, you know. You laugh when you know, it's that deal. And you can still do that with a hunting show, especially with camaraderie with people because they can relate to that. But so that was a unique challenge because here we have all this content from years past, but we have to go back and re-edit it. Luckily, media had come long. You know, we had the hard drives. We just go back in there. We open it up. You know, you can connect all the dots. Even with the upgraded, we'd been using Premiere by then, even though it's had about 1,700,000 freaking upgrades since then. But we can still do it. So we hired a guy that came out of the Denver Film School He's never done no hunting.
Yeah.
But he knew how to edit, and so we just, you know, we invested in
Yeah.
And then we had to get it approved.
Okay.
So we October 15th we went on. There's about an 8-month process to get approved.
Wow.
And jumped through a lot of hoops and this and that. If you misspelled a word in the description, they kick it out. I mean, so it's always something little, or it was at the beginning. And then once we got a feel, okay, this is what they're wanting, here's how we're exporting it, here's the format they need it. I mean, it's just all technical stuff.
Right.
And he knew that, so it was good. But I was watching some of the old stuff, and I'm like, oh, that's a pretty good story.
Yeah.
You know, I even watching it 7, 8, 10 years later, you're like, that's not bad. It's not bad. And that's a good feeling.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, you and I have talked about this, the ability to show our grandkids or you know, or somebody else.
That,
like your desert sheep hunt that you let me help you
yes.
with, that I just freaking enjoyed the crud out of that. Because I might never go on a desert sheep hunt, but for the 2 days and late nights that we were there, we're sitting there and I'm editing
right.
and I'm there. I'm freaking there.
I get so many compliments on that one. I'm like, I didn't edit that one. Trevin did.
But see, but the cool thing is sometimes I can see what the shots are you have to tell the story that I know was there.
Yeah.
And I know we pulled a shot from a day before, but you're wearing the same clothes. We're taking that freedom of creativity that we have to tell a story. Yeah, I need you coming over the hill, sneaking over the hill. Well, that was from the day before.
Right.
But it's still, that's what you had to do. You just didn't have that shot there.
Right, right.
So we're not lying. We're just telling our story in a creative way so that you can get from point A to point B to that shot, when you know, that release and stuff like that. So I think, you know, it's just like sitting around a campfire telling a story. I might tell it different than Maria or, you know, whatever, but the end story is going to be told.
Right.
And so, yeah, but it's good. It's good. So tell me a little bit about what you got in the works. I mean, if you can, I know you've got some stuff that you're working on and you're holding back. And
yeah,
but
that stuff I really can't talk about. It's still a little hush hush.
Okay, okay.
I mean, the things that I can talk about is I have been working not as hard as I should be, I think, on it, but I've been working really hard to kind of get the hunting to be more of a community than it is. You know, stopping with the online bashing, you know, trying to put our best foot forward type thing, and really stop arguing with each other, that kind of stuff. I've been very outspoken about that. As far as career wise, like, I dialed everything way the hell back. I'm doing the podcast full time, you know, like
right.
that
pretty consistently.
Yeah, once a week.
Right, good.
I pull one out once a week. But, you know, my writings, I haven't been doing quite as much lately. I ramped up the guiding business a little bit.
Yes,
that's partly because
Montana Decoy. That's where you've been getting some good footage for Montana Decoy. I saw something you sent me. You need to send me that again, but not through Instagram. Just send me a link so I can put it, so then I can turn around and use it for some of their stuff on the backside, like show booths, stuff like that.
Right.
It's running behind, because Jerry even reached out to me and said, hey, did you see this? I said, yeah, I'm the guy that got that I know him.
Right.
So, yes.
Yeah, Jerry and I have been talking. He's making me a decoy.
What is he making you?
I sent him a super high res cow that I want made.
What does it look like?
It's a feeding, black feeding cow.
Is it sideways?
Yeah.
I wanted that, but I sent him a photo and it wasn't good enough.
Me. He said it wasn't good enough.
So yours is good enough?
Oh, yeah.
So what do you think of that face on cow?
I like the face on cow. He's going to send me one of those.
I think there's a point where that is very effective, especially when you're coming up a draw.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to be moving.
Right.
I think so. Well, when they get that done, I'll tell Jerry to send me one of those too, because I like that idea, because especially in a situation we have him feeding here and you just want to work this way.
Yeah. I learned this from this guy years back. I was hunting in Arizona, and we would hunt in the early season. And I'd always go up, and I'd see this guy, and he built, like, the Trojan horse.
Oh, yeah.
It was a freaking big cow, like a full-size cow, with a wood frame. And him and his buddy would get inside it, and they'd walk, and then they'd stop.
And really?
They'd walk.
It was 3D, like all the way around him.
Yeah, I mean, it was like...
Yeah.
Not really 3D, because the back the backside was open.
Okay.
But it was actually three. It was front, this side, and that side, but the backside was open.
Okay.
So they'd walk and they'd stop. They'd walk and they'd stop. I mean, it'd take them like an hour to do what they want to. That guy killed a buck every freaking year in the same pasture every year. Because every year, right before deer season, the rancher would move cows up to this, and it's all public land.
Right.
But he would move it into this, you know, there'd be cows in there. And every year he'd, and I was like, oh, somebody needs to make a cow decoy. This is way before Montana decoy or any of that. So, and I always had the idea, like, how am I going to do this? I don't know. I honestly don't know. The image wasn't great, but, you know, we're talking a while back. So I don't know how he did it, but he did it. Mm. He made it, like, you know, out of plywood. Or not plywood. It was like a, what is it? Like a really, that really thin finishing board that you use for, like, yeah.
Yeah.
That, but it was on a wood frame, like so a 1x1.
It was heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know how the hell you got it up there.
So I've used, of course, the Ibex decoy that they made for me. I've used a muskox in Greenland.
Yeah.
Worked great.
Oh, I could see that working.
I got into a herd of like 22. Now, there was no I didn't want to shoot, but I just want to see how close I could get. Oh, yeah. I walked right up to him. Yeah. Of course, I could have had four guys because it's so big, right?
Right.
Bighorn sheep.
Yep.
And a mountain goat.
Nice.
So, and then this last cow decoy they made, and then I think I sent you some footage of walking up that draw.
Yeah, that worked out good.
30 minutes, and they friggin', and of course, CJ's got a recurve, so he, and it's the wind's blowing. I mean, a compound, you could have shot any of those deer.
For sure.
But, yeah.
No,
I think
cool.
It's what I like about hunting is you don't have to follow the rule book. You can think out of the box.
I made a career of that. Like, people ask me, oh, you know, because I'm not a super sneaky guy. I kill most of my big bucks in Arizona. Most of the big mule deer I've killed in Arizona have all been calling them in during the rut.
What are you doing to call them in?
I try not to let that
out.
That's
a secret.
That's a secret.
Okay. No, that's fine.
And the reason why, it's like I give away all my secrets. It's like the one thing I really don't put out there very often.
Let me just ask you this. Is it a curiosity they're coming to, or is it truly
it's all situational.
Okay.
I mean, I use your traditional whitetail tactics, rattling and that type of stuff.
Sure,
also, you know, grunt tubes, whatever. But I use predator calls. I use, but it's all situational, and it's all about the setup.
Right.
And that whole setup thing came about from me learning how to be a good coyote bow hunter.
Which I got to go with you.
Yeah, we didn't call it that day.
No, we called in that one. Remember when you didn't get a shot?
Yeah, you're right.
The funny thing, this was what, 2 years ago? And it was about this, maybe a little bit later than this, but I flew in to speak at the ISC.
Yep.
So and he goes, come on, let's go. We're going to go call coyotes. And we go to call coyotes, and you live in the Phoenix area.
Yeah.
We literally go, there's houses on either side, you got your bow, and we just go into these big parcels of desert,
state land.
Yep. Right in the middle of town, and you set up and start calling, and you're freaking shooting coyotes with a bow, and you can see a house, and you can see a business over there. Yeah. And
you just got to be a quarter mile away.
Yep. It was cool.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, I've kind of, made a name for myself with that, but I think I'm one of the only guys that's really doing it consistently. You know, consistently. Did I say consistent or consistently? Like, yeah. Anyway, but with the bow, I get a lot of guys. I actually did a seminar in Phoenix. When was that? Do you remember? That wasn't too long ago.
A couple months.
Yeah, it was in the fall sometime. I did a seminar at Phoenix Varmint Callers Association, basically. And then I don't know, but people keep asking me, oh, John, you got to, you know, do a DVD series or you got to do something. But people want to learn how to do it.
Right.
I put up, Rockside asked me to do an article on it. I did an article for them on it. And I got a lot of feedback. A lot of people, oh, that's a awesome article, man. I'm going to have to try that out. You know, because me bow hunting coyotes was a way for me to improve my big game hunting. I wanted to hone my skills. I wanted to be able to, I remember the first time I thought about it was I was actually sitting in a tree stand. I was tree stand hunting, and it was during the rut. And you know how that could be sometimes. It's like a drive-by shooting, you
right,
know?
Yeah, exactly.
Big bucks chasing a doe, and you're like, right. I couldn't get him to stop. Right. I couldn't do. Well, what can I do lifelike that's going to be kind of like that, where I have to draw back, you know, acquire target, range all of that, all in my head, shoot, and make an effective shot? Calling coyotes.
Right.
So that kind of came about that.
So you almost looked at that as being able to set yourself up for success in that situation during the rut when you're doing that bucks pushing that, because you've got such a small window of time to acquire target, set your range, all that stuff. Yeah.
I'm very, so my first degree in college was exercise physiology and corporate fitness and wellness. So like I did a lot of sports specific training. So I always looked at it that way. What can I do? Like what my training still to now to this day is always about what can I do to put myself in a situation that's going to mimic something that I've seen or been in before. So, you know, if I think about elk hunting, I mean, you calling in a bull, you know, here comes a bull. You might've ranged up a few things, but you know, it doesn't always work out. They don't always come the way you want them to come in. So again, coyote hunting was the same thing. Boom, here comes an animal flying in at 30 miles an hour, you know, full force, you know, running in. You know, sometimes they come trotting in, sometimes they don't. But it was a way for me to get good at those situational shots where I could just pull it. And it's honestly why I was able to kill my ibex.
Well, I do remember this when we were setting up. I'm like, how in the heck is he going to, you know, when are you going to draw? And you were telling me, well, by the time I first see them, they might be 80, 100 yards out. I'm coming to draw.
Right.
Because if they're within 40, they're probably going to pick you off on the draw.
Absolutely.
So you're literally coming to draw, and they're so fast anyway. They're there in a second.
Right. And they only stop for like 2 seconds.
So you've got your area ranged in front of you. You're shooting angles, if you will. You know exactly what your distance is. And a lot of those coyotes, what are you shooting them at? Under 20 yards, I would say.
I've shot them as close as 10 and as far as 80.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Wow.
My best shot today to date was the very first time that I took somebody outside of my circle coyote hunting. And I shot a coyote at 55 yards on a dead run. And I was kind of amazed with it. And the guy that I took was like, oh, my God, John, you're the freaking man.
So,
I still have yet to do that again.
So did you just lead him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I basically was just – and, you know, here's like – so in Arizona at that ISE, they had that pop-up 3D with the moving targets and all that stuff. So I used to practice a lot of that too, like just – set up a bunch of different targets, turn around the other way, not, you know, have somebody set up the targets in different ranges. Just open my eyes and whack, 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 whack.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
At one point, when the train for hunt thing was going on, remember, I don't know if they did this at every single one, but you had 7 seconds to shoot two arrows.
Yeah, the two arrows.
I was the only guy.
Yeah.
The only guy in all the Arizona applicants. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, because I practiced that.
Right.
You know, Legolas.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm nowhere near as good. It's so funny how it's so easy to lose that. I mean, of course, I'm getting older too. My eyesight's not the same. It takes me a second longer to focus on things. But I haven't been practicing that way. The last 2 years, everything's changed. Like, I don't practice as much as I did. I don't hunt as much as I have in the past. And I noticed everything is affected by that.
Right. Yeah.
Everything.
I noticed I'm not nearly as effective. Exactly. You're not as sharp.
Yep.
Yeah. Animals that I've shot in the past that were like, I had this minute, and it's like, to me, I'm like, no problem. And there's times you're like, I don't know if I can make that shot again.
Yeah.
Because everything was, and we use that alpha bow hunting now up in Denver. They put that on, and that's a lot of fun, but there's a lot of things like that.
Yeah.
So creating movement along with physical exertion, so you're used to, it's like you're running ahead of the elk herd, and you're getting yourself in position, you're out of breath, and you still got to make the shot.
Yep.
So, that's fun.
I attribute, I would say, 90% of whatever success I've had was to the training that I did to, you know, and the rest was luck.
What's your, if you look back on your hunting career to date, What animal sticks out in your mind is maybe your top one or two? The hunt, the way the hunt set up, the rarity of the trophy, maybe, or just the.
You're gonna laugh because it's probably one of my smallest trophies I have. Mm-hmm. I would say the one deer that sticks out the most to me, I shot a little. It's right when we first got together. A little four-corn velvet buck up in northern Arizona. And I hadn't ever tree stand hunted up there. Well, I think I did 1 year prior to that, tree stand hunted. And I said to myself, you know, I'm going to do things different this year. I'm not going to spot and stalk. I'm not going to do what I normally do. And I'm like, I'm going to pattern a deer and I'm going to shoot a deer. That's how I'm going to do it. I'm not on water, not on salt licks, nothing. So I took some of my whitetail tricks. This area had a fence line, barbed wire fence, just a regular three strand,
cow fence.
Yeah, cow fence. And one of the tricks that I learned years ago, especially if there was already a trail along that fence, and there was, if you put a cinch in the fence, take a piece of wire, cinch the top, over the top wire and cinch up the top, it'll make a crossing, right, and deer will cross there because deer are lazy. They'll walk another, it's not like, it's crazy because they'll walk another 200 yards instead of jumping over a fence to find a break or whatever. But if there's a break right there, they'll jump right there.
Right.
Or they'll cross under. Mm-hmm. So that's why you do the top and bottom. The does and fawns will cross underneath and those will jump over. Or the bucks will jump over, rather.
Right.
So I made a fence cinch there and it was a burn. There was a burn right there. And I went through and I took the chainsaw and I cut a path through the burn. Made an easy path. Path of least resistance. Deer started using that to cut this corner of this burn. And I'm like, I'm going to set a tree stand up. There's like the only tree that was right on the edge of where the burn and the fresh forest met. I'm going to cut a path across this corner. Deer are going to use it. So it was inside corner, creating a path of least resistance, and the fence cinch. Three whitetail tricks that I learned over the years. And I put all three of them together. Elk were coming down it, freaking deer. And I end up shooting the one of the first bucks I had an opportunity at. But I should have held out because I had, on camera, I had much bigger bucks. But I killed that buck, and it was the first year that there was an archery draw. Was that when we first got together?
I don't remember this.
Your dad came up and helped me with it, that deer. It was the year that you actually sat in the tree stand with me.
Oh, then it was, we were married.
Were we married?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought for some reason, I thought it was when we...
Yeah.
It was right after
it
we first
got.
It was
the one time I went in the tree stand with you.
Yeah.
Boring.
Yeah. And you didn't have an iPhone then to play solitaire, did you?
Probably not.
You had the BlackBerry.
I did. I had a BlackBerry. Tree stand hunting's not my favorite.
Yeah.
No, that's not mine either. I mean, it is not in Arizona. I won't do it again in Arizona, but... It definitely, but anyway, because it worked out and had
the way a plan,
and I executed.
You executed, yeah. and you filled the freezer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's crazy because everybody's like, "Oh, you desert sheep, your ibex, big bull elks, this and that." I'm like, "Yeah, those are all great. I got beautiful trophies. I have, but the two deer, the two animals that stick out the most to me." Or is that Forky Horn and a buck I call Swamp Donkey, which is a buck I shot in New York.
In New York, yeah. And I remember that video.
Because I had so much invested in that.
Right.
You know, it was a time, 4 years, I hunted that deer.
And I think that's why I fell in love, because I didn't hunt whitetail. I was 33 years old before I ever hunted whitetail. And I think that's what you're talking about is exactly what drew me to the chess match that is whitetail.
It's chess game.
And then when you learn a few of those tricks, they're actually applicable out west.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and a lot of people think, oh, this is how you hunt whitetail. Here's how you hunt mule deer, let's just say. But there's a lot of that stuff that can cross over.
Oh, yeah.
And, back to the creativity of, just because – it's not what you saw XYZ do on the hunt, you know, the on some hunt you saw on TV right. or whatever. I mean, I've climbed out of a tree stand and stalked up on a bedded whitetail and shot him.
Yeah. See, I love doing stuff
right.
like that.
Right. I mean,
I like out of the box stuff.
If you, it's like we say about ibex. All you got to do is fool their eyes, their ears, and their nose. Right?
Yeah.
That's all you
got
to do
right.
to kill any animal.
Yeah.
But the fact that ibex are scared of their own shadow.
Yeah.
And there's no way to pattern them.
And their shadow's up on a cliff.
Yeah, exactly. So that makes it a little bit different. But yeah. Yeah, that's fun. That's fun.
Yeah.
Wow.
I keep putting in every year. Still haven't gotten drawn again.
Yeah.
Got too. We made that thing too popular.
I haven't applied. You know who I'm applying now? My daughter for the youth hunt, which starts right after Christmas.
Really?
Because I go to Christmas at my sister's house in Deming.
Right.
So I'm like, how perfect. And my nephew is 14 also.
Yeah.
So I'm applying for my daughter and my nephew now for the youth hunts in New Mexico. And I bet they'll draw an ibex rifle for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I mean, how cool would it be to take them after the history that I have, and of course the history you have, but to take my daughter or my nephew up there.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure they'll shoot a bigger one than what I shot.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, you know,
the rifle.
300 yards is manageable.
Oh my God, yeah.
30 yards.
I can't tell you how many times on that. I was like, oh my God, I wish I had a rifle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 30 yards is a little different.
If I had a rifle, I think I could have got it done from the truck.
I think we both would have been done the first day of the first, you know. But, you know, investing the 30 days I put on that mountain.
Yeah.
Blood, sweat, and tears. Literal blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah.
And I have this little Billy with horns about 6 to 8 inches.
Cares?
I have a full body mount. He's up on.
Oh, you did a full body?
Nice. And he's like laying on a rock ledge.
Nice.
And it's. That to me, because of what we went into that, and the fact that we're two cameramen everywhere we went, you know, and dragging that, you guys are on the bottom radioing up, and we're moving down, and you know, we have outfitters come in and blow the friggin' ibex out from. Remember that we were 100 yards from those.
What was the guy that was with you? Your friend that was with you?
It was Tanner.
No, not Tanner. Not the guy that was filming. There was another guy that was hunting with you.
Nathan. Yeah,
he should have got that one killed.
Oh, he should have got that one killed. But you and I were 100 yards from those three that were bedded.
I know.
And that guy drove his truck up, jumped out, and ran up towards the ibex.
Yeah, just to spite us.
Just to spite us. That's. I mean, that ain't right.
No.
I don't care where you're from. That ain't right.
No.
But anyway, good times, good times. Well, for me, it's it's. I'm at a point in my life where. I don't know where this will keep going.
Unable?
The moment I quit enjoying it.
Okay.
I'm done.
Yeah.
But I still enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I enjoy it because of the whole production, the ability to share an adventure with somebody. You know, you might not be there, but hopefully I can hand you this. You can watch it, but you're not cold, you're not wet, you're not tired. Right? That was always my goal. I wanted you to feel a sense of the excitement and the adrenaline of why I do what I do.
Right.
But you're not cold, you're not wet, you're not tired.
Yeah.
Or in Arizona, you're not
hot.
You're not
dry.
You're not dry and you're, yeah. Okay.
Getting bit by snakes.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you got on the, any hunts coming up other than the stag hunt in Argentina?
I drew a spring bear tags, first time I put it in for a long time in Arizona. My daughter, Ella, has a turkey tag.
Oh, awesome.
So hopefully we'll get, I keep looking at the schedule between her soccer and school and stuff. I'm probably going to have to take her out of school for a day.
Oh, darn.
By the way, it's on national something now.
it's
out there.
It's at least documented.
It's happening. Yeah, so basically until July. I go to California and hunt A Zone with my buddy Charles.
And that starts the 15th?
17th, I think.
Of July?
Yeah.
That's always so early, but that's those blacktails, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it keeps kicking my ass every year. I bet you anyway, I'm out the money when I kill that one. That will be my new favorite because I mean, come on. I've killed just about everything you can
imagine.
How are you
hunting those out there? Are you trying to
spot and stalk? It's been all spot and stalk.
And you're patterning them.
No.
So you're literally glassing just like you would out in the deserts.
Yep.
You're glassing them. You're trying to sneak in, yeah. Shoot them.
Okay. And I think I'm going to have to change up my tactic. To, I've been close so many times.
Can you decoy? I mean, what about getting a decoy for
maybe,
that?
Maybe.
I mean, I have hunted mule deer done really good with a whitetail decoy.
Yeah.
They don't know it's not. I mean, I would think
the cow. I think the cow would work there.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Because there's a lot of cattle in that country.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all you need is 60 yards.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
I mean, the way you shoot.
I think I'm going to change it up. I got stubborn and I wanted to do it as that way. You know, like, oh, you want to get it done with a recurve.
Right.
Or you want to get. I wanted to be pure spot and stalk, but now I just want to get one. So
okay.
I think this year when I go, I'm going to break out every trick I know.
Yeah.
So.
And how long do you usually go on that? Like a week?
It's 6 days of hunting. Yeah.
Okay. God, that's got to be hot.
It is. It's miserable. You know, it's very nice in the morning because you get the coastal.
Right.
And it's probably 50, 55 degrees in the morning.
How long do you have to hunt? Like, okay, so let's say.
The mornings you could go pretty much to about 11.
So
which is pretty long.
Are you doing like mule deer where you're spotting them? Okay, it's bedded right there. Okay, now
yeah.
You're going to let them settle, and then you have a length of time. They're not going to move.
Right.
Unless maybe the sun moves.
Well, the sun changes, and then they get up and they move to a different spot.
Right, right.
But usually that second spot is in a place that you wouldn't be able to shoot them. It's like real thick. They'll go lay down and like, there's a lot of poison oak over there. They'll go lay in that, you know. A lot of times, I don't even wait till they bed down. And maybe that might be the problem. But I've had so many opportunities that where I was at 80 yards or 90 yards and I just needed to get, you know. Right.
Well, you hunt coos deer so much. I can only imagine that, I mean, they can't be any more spooky than a coos deer.
It's not that they're more spooky. I think what it is the time of year. Everything is super dry. The terrain is steep. Everything's like Rice Krispies and potato chips. That's what it sounds like when you walk around.
Right. That
you
makes
got these
sense.
Madrone leaves. Everything's like. So.
Decoy. I think the decoy, because if they look and it's a cow, well, cows are going to make noise.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I had an opportunity, solid opportunity. I got to 70 yards couple years back. Pure spot and stalk. I saw him feeding down and I got to this spot. It was a kind of like a spot in ambush. I got to a spot where I knew he was going to cross in front of me. He didn't cross in front of me. He got to where I was at and he laid down right there in that little coulee. So when he laid down, I should have shot him before he laid down, but he wasn't giving me a great angle. So I'm like, I'll just let him lay down. And I'll just sit here and wait for him to get back up. And I'm ranging. I've ranged like, I don't know, 400 times.
Right.
And my rangefinder was telling me, I don't even remember the exact yardages, but whatever it was 7 yards difference.
Mm.
The grass was so tall.
Mm-hmm.
I was hitting the grass before him.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was bouncing it off his antlers or whatever, because all you could see was the top of his antlers. That's how tall the grass was, you know. And he finally stood up, and I shot right under him. And he was a big, I mean, he was a Boone and Crockett buck.
Wow.
That's a crazy thing. People look at my stuff. They're all these guys are kind of like, oh, how are you finding all these giant deer? I'm like, well, I'm used to looking for, you know, little coos deer in the deepest, thickest, you know, whatever. So for me to find a buck in the, you know, grasslands that you guys got out over here, it's not that hard.
Right.
But I can't figure out how to, I can't say anything because I figure out how to kill the things. But, and it's funny because the guy that I hunt with, Charles, he still hunts. And he's kind of adapted his style a little bit because he's been hunting with me. So he's gotten even, now he's got some more tools in his toolbox. But he pretty much used to just take his bow for a walk in the woods. But he's super quiet and he knows how to like move and look ahead of him. Like I look it down on my feet too much when I do that, you know. But, and he's super, he kills one every year.
Right.
Every year.
So where are you guiding at now? South Dakota.
South Dakota. I only guide in South Dakota for basically 2 weeks. And then just in Arizona.
And then back in Arizona.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We're elk, coos deer, mule deer, javelina. Javelina is one of my big ones for some reason.
They're fun to hunt.
They are. I call it the gateway drug, you know?
Right.
It's like guys come. That's how I get all my coos deer rifle hunters. You know, guys come on the javelina hunt. They see what we're doing, glass in, looking, you know, hiking up these giant mountains and, you know, whatever from the, you know, from the valley floor and shooting our coos deer, or excuse me, shooting our javelina, and they want to do that for coos deer because they see a lot of coos deer down that time of year too. So, yeah, it's fun.
That's
good time.
Cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you've got fun times. So you're going to Argentina with him, Maria.
This is John's 40th birthday present. She's got 4 years later.
Oh, wow.
4 years later. Yeah.
Now, you're a young buck.
Yeah.
I'm 48.
Yeah, you're only 4 years older than me.
Yeah, but I just got these.
Uh-oh. Your eyes going?
So, for those of you who can't see, I'm pulling these little.
Oh, my.
Because I can't, like, I like to read at night.
Yeah.
And I'm getting to where I'm doing this, stretching my arms out longer because I read on my iPhone.
Yeah.
And it's the greatest thing. Well, since I quit drinking, I think I'm learning, you know, I drank a lot of times just to shut my brain off because I couldn't, I was always going. And for me to sleep, I just lay there and think, well, I'd look a little nippy nip, you know, and hey, I'm ready to go to bed, right? Well, so I found out I can read and I get the same, it shuts my brain down, I'm ready to go to bed. So here I'm reading, and I'm like, so I said, I'm going to try it. So I bought some
right.
And fly fishing. I can't bring tie the fly because I can't, it's, I'm like, this, but then it's so tiny.
How do those stay
on? So, yeah,
on?
I got these little, they just clip right on my nose.
There you go.
And of course, then I can read this. Now, it's not doesn't do me any good here because it's blurry, but right here when I'm reading, it's very comfortable.
Yeah.
So, I don't show them to a lot of people, but my wife just laughs at me, but she'll need them too.
The day I turned 40, I needed glasses. It was like a light switch.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's for
close up. I need it for the computer screen.
Yeah.
I can see, I can read.
You know, I still edit without them.
Yeah.
But my computer screen, maybe it's the distance. I can anticipate in the near future that I will probably wear them for that too.
It sucks. I'm telling you, it's been hard for me. It's a little blow to the ego.
It is.
Yeah, especially since I do so much like glassing and all. I mean, glassing luckily has not been affected.
At least I
haven't noticed.
I
anyway.
Just make an adjustment on my, you know, on the actual glass itself. And
So.
Yeah. But, well, thanks for sitting down with me, guys. It's good to catch up again. This is, Western Hunting Expo is great for this because you can't walk 10, 20 feet without seeing somebody, you know, that you've known for a while or a friend or somebody you've hunted with or whatever.
It is my favorite show. One, because it's a conservation show. And two, like you said, you know, it's, you feel like you know a lot of people. I mean, you go to SHOT Show, you run into people because there's so many people.
There's so many people, and they're always I go to the SHOT Show, I got a full schedule.
Yeah.
I can't just say, hey, let's go do a podcast.
I've been gone in, what, 3 years?
Oh, I was pregnant with Luca.
Because you came with me.
Oh,
so
my.
4 years ago. More than 4 years ago.
So the one thing that I really appreciated this year was, number one, I was hunting instead of going to the ATA show.
Mm-hmm.
And the SHOT Show, I wasn't hunting, but I wasn't going anyway, and I didn't get sick. I always used to go, but then I'd come back with the flu.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're around so many people, and it's that show flu, right?
Yeah.
So I've, knock on wood, I've been pretty fortunate and healthy.
I think it's been 5 years for me since I got to ATA. Last time I went, we went Matt Ament and Tony Cachera and who else? Daniel. Daniel Willett.
You see Matt much?
I don't see him as much.
The only way I keep up on him is social media. Yeah. It's the only way.
His dad just passed.
Oh, that's too bad.
And
Matt Ament was huge. For those of you listening, he's out of. He's working for the Cardinals, right?
Cardinals, ASU. Coyotes.
And at the Mayo.
ASU and Mayo.
So,
and
Mayo but he was really involved in the early days of Train to Hunt.
Oh,
he was
yeah.
one of the guys that kind of, I know you and him kind of helped bring that to Arizona.
Oh, it was more him than me.
But
way more than him than me. I barely did anything.
Well, I always enjoyed him.
Yeah.
Always enjoyed him. He's a good dude. Good dude.
Yeah, so.
Well, I will let you guys go. Again, as always, to end every podcast with, for those of you listening, go embrace something that inspires you, that stirs the wildness in you. Embrace it. God bless, and we'll see you down the trail.
Hey guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand-in-hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.